This is Paul Jindrasiak for Sunday Morning Town Square, and I'm joined in studio by Lisa Rose Starner from Burdick and Rose and Andy Drott from Uptown Farm. We're going to be chatting about urban farming and herbalism in Grand Rapids. How are you guys doing today?
Very well, thanks.
I'm great, thanks, Paul.
So for those who may not be familiar with urban farming and herbalism, could you guys explain it a bit?
Well, there's a movement to bring food production, especially food that is highly perishable, closer to where people live. And so that's just in farming certain things in the city or growing food in your backyard or finding a place for a garden on a windowsill or something like that. It's just kind of the next progressive step towards buying our food from the farms that are closest to our city instead of from, states and states away. Empowering people to grow food in a vacant lot or in their front yard or backyard or whatever just makes sense.
Yeah, this is a part of a growing trend that's happened in the United States over the past 15 years. People are more concerned about the sources of their food, food safety. They want to take care of the planet. People want to make sure what they're eating is full of nutrients and vitamins. And also make sure that everyone has access to good, clean, fair, healthy food. And urban farming is just one of those components to really looking at how as urbanites, as people that live in the city, how can we reside on the land that surrounds us and work with it and work with the natural systems and also provide food for the residents.
Sure. And what type of work do each of you guys do specifically related to urban farming and herbalism?
I live and work in my homestead on the west side. We have a little under an acre that's been in our family for about 50 years.
Okay.
And so I grow food for my own family. I don't grow enough food to support us for the entire year. One of my specialties, though, is herbal remedies and using plants, local plants, weeds. I love weeds. Everything that's deemed invasive, I embrace and love. But also grow different perennials and herbs that can be used as syrups and different formulas for wellness.
Okay. Andy?
Yeah, well, my family and several other families wanted to get involved in the local and urban agricultural conversation, if you will. And so we looked around and saw a model that's called spin farming. So we didn't make it up, but it's the idea of growing very intensively and in very quick succession on a small amount of land and making it commercially viable. So this is something that we did. We set up a business and we sold the restaurants and at market and things like that to try to prove that you could actually have a farm on a small city lot and make it financially viable. And grow great food.
Now, you guys are located at 940 Wealthy. What was it that was attractive about Wealthy Street for Uptown Farm?
A number of things. I mean, it is a block and a half from my house. And since I was this past summer going to be putting most of the work in, I was definitely looking for a lot that was,
close.
So I could just get up in the morning with my coffee and walk over there, The other thing was that Wealthy, just everyone drives by there. Like, everyone saw it as soon as we started tilling it up and a lot of excitement, and we didn't have to put our efforts into farming and not marketing. So it was pretty cool.
So if folks want to purchase items from the farm, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, we set up a website where people could order things, items that we had available at the time. But we're not like a normal farm that has like all the, shiny, fruity, vegetables like tomatoes and things. We focus very, much on meeting the demand for greens and things that are highly perishable, even don't stand 20 miles in a truck without refrigeration,
Okay.
So we our best bet was to sell to restaurants. And we did do some bagged salad greens at Wednesday night market and things like that. But like Bartertown, bought a lot of stuff from us. So if people want food from Uptown, they could order directly from us, or they could go and support one of the cool restaurants that was really, helping us out by giving us a chance. Grove was buying some stuff from us, and Dorganics bought some stuff from us, so those sorts of things.
Yeah. Now, how many urban farm spaces do we presently have here in Grand Rapids that you guys know about?
I think they vary in scope, right? So you've got Andy, the Uptown Farm is a market garden that's serving both, a little bit at the farmers markets, but then selling directly to restaurants. Probably, really, there are not many you know, there's certainly their place is one of a kind. You've got different incarnations of community gardeners mm-hmm. and that have community collective gardening spaces that mostly are for their own personal use and family use.
Okay.
You know, mine it's a private space and mm-hmm. it's not a big collective of people, and it's, you know, I take care of the gardens mm-hmm. myself. So there's a wide range of different gardeners and incarnations depending on how people want to grow their food.
Okay. Whether it's, you know, having something public like Andy does or something private like yourself.
Yeah.
And what if somebody wanted to start their own personal urban garden on their property? How do they go about that?
You know, I've been in local food and gardening. In fact, when I moved back from the Bay Area, I worked in my 20s with gardening with kids, and mm-hmm. so developing school gardens at schools with children. And so people send me all the time, like, how do I get a garden started? How do I start a farm? I'm like, call Extension. Yeah, you know, I think the first steps to becoming a gardener or an urban farmer is get some seeds, you know, look up the Master Gardeners or the community, the Michigan State University Extension mm-hmm. office here in town. You know, and just garden fearless. You can start something as simple in the windowsill. I'm actually not a good gardener, but what I am okay. is fearless. And I know how to look up information, and I know how to trial and error and look to best practices and ask for advice and talk to the old timers and realize if my land just isn't going to grow it.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the sustainability conversation. I have a really unique piece of property that has a gully, that has a front yard. I've got lots of trees. There's only a small amount that's good for vegetable production,
okay.
and the rest of it is really suited toward perennials and different types of plants.
Okay.
And as a gardener, that's what you learn. You mm-hmm. learn how to watch your soil. You learn how to pay attention to the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something also people frequently, I'm an avid forager, and people will say, you know, also, how do I start foraging? And the biggest part is start paying attention to where you are and
okay.
what the land is like.
Okay. So what are you looking at as far as the quality of the land if you're going to choose, you know, land in your backyard or wherever?
So property choice is really important. You know, Andy's can talk a little bit about his experience in terms of selecting a site, but then also designing a crop rotation
mm-hmm.
based on the availability of sunlight, and then also having proper soil tests to make
okay.
sure the land is free of any okay. contamination.
And any thoughts on that from you, Andy?
Yeah, there's some things you can control and some things you can't. You know, solar access is a huge one. You know, if you've got huge trees that are blocking
okay.
you know, most of your sun.
Could help us.
There's really, you know, I mean, you might be able to cut some down if it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
If buildings are blocking, you know, that kind of thing. It can work to your advantage or it can work to your disadvantage. So some things are, you really got to choose your spot based on things that you can't control, like solar mm-hmm. access. Maybe you just need to look at a different spot.
Mm-hmm.
Others, like, the great thing about growing on small amount of land is you can actually improve your soil pretty quick, you know, with certain amendments
mm-hmm.
and things like that. But if you've got the presence of lead or arsenic or something like that, it's very important to know that because then maybe, I mean, there are ways of solving that, but it might be better just to look at another lot. There's lots of vacant lots around the city, actually, and
okay.
Lots of backyards and lots of things like that. So, I mean, those are some of the things that are kind of first and foremost is you know what sort of things are in your soil,
mm-hmm.
whether it's nutrients or, you know, toxins.
Okay.
And then know if you're going to get enough sun to grow what you want to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, where are you going to get water? That's a huge one.
Okay.
Because as we found out last summer, sometimes it can be downright desert-like here
Absolutely.
In Michigan in the summer. So, you know, those are definitely some things.
Now, if somebody's going to start their own personal one, do they need permits, or is it just pretty simple? Go set it up, and you're all good to go.
Yeah, you know, we really wanted to explore that, because one of our goals is definitely to enable and share anything we learn.
Sure.
I mean, we think there's room for 100 Uptown Farms,
mm-hmm.
you know, in Grand Rapids. I think it'd be great if we worked together, and we were actually pursuing that, some sort of cooperative enterprise or marketing for food grown in the city.
Okay.
We'd love to see that happen. But we definitely wanted to know, we wanted to do everything above board. So I contacted the city,
mm-hmm.
and we are in historical preservation section too, so that, that added another layer. But it was all really, really easy.
Okay.
As long as we're not, they just asked us not to compost on site.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked us, you know, please don't put any animals.
No chickens.
And then, you know, I mean, I think the city definitely does want to pursue more specific, policies regarding mm-hmm. agriculture in the city. They definitely do. But for the moment, as long as you just can avoid those couple of things, which is, we're not talking about that. So we're not talking about raising goats or chickens. You know, we're okay. talking about growing some vegetables
sure.
in some land that was doing nothing but collecting trash. Mm-hmm. And so they just, you know, Suzanne said, that sounds great. It sounds exactly like a community garden. That's what we'll call it.
Might
and,
as well positively utilize that
yeah.
space.
Yeah. So, super easy. The only thing I would say is you don't even really, if you're not going to put animals on it, you're just going to, you know, it's really just a market garden or a mm-hmm. community garden, just do it. It's already your right. That is in the Grand Rapids policy.
Mm-hmm.
If you happen to be in a historical district like we are, mm-hmm. run, if you want to put a fence on the front or whatever, you got to run it by Rhonda.
Sure.
You know, but that's
sure.
it.
So, yeah, we do have a really, I think, progressive city planner, Suzanne Schultz.
Sure.
Really, she owns her own restaurant business, you know, with her husband. They get the food movement. They, she, mm-hmm. you know, Suzanne really wants to advocate, you know, for community gardens, for sustainable mm-hmm. living. You know, she herself lives in Heritage Hill, walks. I think the city can take a more progressive approach in designing some more favorable policy. We've went through the chicken ordinance debacle a couple of years back. You know, as well as the composting ordinance. And, you know, I think there are people that don't have chickens and don't have compost piles in the city because mm-hmm. it technically is illegal. Okay. Granted, the enforcement, you know, there's sort of a don't ask, don't tell
right.
MO.
Right.
I will, you know, I publicly, everybody knows that I have a compost pile. And it's sort of an act of civil disobedience. No one knows. but I strongly feel that from a sustainability perspective, we need to have provisions mm-hmm. in place that can reasonably allow mm-hmm. a responsible citizen to compost. When you get into the animals issue, the chickens specifically weren't even talking about goats or even roosters,
okay.
and it was a hen policy that was designed with leaders in the community, the food community, and with the city. And then it kind of got... it totally got waylaid at the last minute before the commission meeting, and that got thrown up.
So do you think we're eventually going to see city chickens, that will come to pass?
You know, I think so. I think timing is really important.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a big future in local food, and there's a big growing demand for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then you look at season extension and the possibility of working with unheated structures and have food production year-round, especially here in the winter. You know, that's I think, the direction that we're heading. And I think from Grand Rapids and its sustainability platform, it's something I think we want to not just embrace but kind of mm-hmm. run with.
Okay.
Structures on a lot is a big thing. It would be really helpful if we could have a lot declared, you know, for small urban agricultural use
okay.
and get around a policy that prevents, say, a small greenhouse larger than a shed, but, you know, about the size of a garage. You can't have a secondary structure currently on a city lot without a primary structure.
Okay.
So a greenhouse bigger than a shed would violate that policy. But it's, you know, that policy is only there so that people don't stick a garage and use a vacant lot as a, you know, storage
okay.
thing, you know. So there's definitely things that the city can do to embrace more fully. Mm-hmm. And I think they would like to.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we, you know, people have to ask for it before because it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. At the same time, you can start a garden with a shovel, a bucket, mm-hmm. grow some tomatoes. Especially kids love it. Like really simple container gardening, super easy. There's a growing popularity of gardening classes.
Okay.
And right now is the time to order seeds and to start, even though it's like January.
Right.
Now is a really great time to start thinking about garden planning.
Okay.
So the Meyer Gardens is a great resource. The Michigan State University Extension is a resource.
Okay.
Grand Rapids Community College is hosting a Roots course, I believe it's called, for people that are interested in urban agriculture to start understanding soil quality and those different aspects. So the popularity is pushing also demand for classes, which is really cool.
Now, Lisa, you're also into herbalism. What got you interested in that?
You know, I've worked my entire professional career with food. As an undergraduate at Grand Valley, I studied anthropology and explored the rise of agriculture and how humans have used land for food, medicine, shelter across time. And I've always been fascinated with how we live with the land. And working in local food really took me down a path of gardening with kids. But then also for my own personal wellness, I really started asking the questions, how can these plants around me, just the local weeds that's, you know, even garlic mustard that we would deem invasive and, you know, the dastardly garlic mustard plants. You know, our land is there and offers a lot of secrets to healing, and not even secrets, but we've used plants in a myriad of ways across time that we don't do any longer.
Right.
So, you know, even in the middle of winter, pine tip tea is a big favorite at my house for chronic, you know, sinus inflammation and respiratory congestion. And those types of things, it's from a self-sufficiency and sustainability perspective for my family. It's interesting. It gets me outside. I get really excited to take people through the woods and introduce them to plants that they might not know.
Okay.
And that's just what I really love to do. I really, really love to. In fact, even when the first time I had gone over to see Andy's garden space, I was, you know, pointing out the weeds. And I'm like, oh, look at here. Pulling them all out, purslane. I like plants. I like the plants that no one really, that no one loves. Okay. Everybody loves the rose bush, but no one loves the weedy invasive things they're pulling out of their garden most of the year. But
how long does it take to understand, you know, what's good and what's not good? Because I'd imagine there's some things out there that might be dangerous
or not
good for you.
Yeah, I mean, common sense 101, you know, don't put something in your mouth that you don't know what it is off the top. Like, that's just, you know, Darwin would say the same thing.
Sure.
And if you do, well, Darwin would say the same thing.
Oh, well, too bad.
you know. So, you know, it does take time with knowing where you're at and paying attention to the land and, you know, get some plant guides. And these are things we used to know. We used to know the plants that lived around us because that's what kept us alive, right? We used to can. We used to, you know, cure meats and all of these things just because that's what we needed to do.
Right.
And with pharma, with the Walgreens down the street, with access to over-the-counter anti-inflammatories and cold medicines, whether or not they work, that's another conversation for a different show. But there are a lot of things you can do within your own household to take care of basic ailments. And currently, with the current healthcare issues and the cost of copays and the cost of medicine in general, we need to turn back to some of those traditions that we used to have in our own pantry and kitchen, because it's just cheaper, it's more affordable, it's health, it's, you know, it's local.
Okay.
You know, making teas out of plants from your garden to address a sore throat or a common simple cough. You know, that's medicine is in our gardens, both as food and as, you know, remedies
for
illness.
But we've become so reliant on big pharmaceuticals and stuff like that, so that's what we're used to these days.
You know, and there's a place for conventional medicine, you know. I've sports injury, tore my ACL. Well, plants, you know, can help support healing and repair, but, you know, I had a great surgeon up on Medical Mile that tied me up really nice, and, you know, my knee bends again.
Right.
I'm pretty happy about that.
Sure.
But
it's
got
to be a balance as far as what you use.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason for me to pay that $168 doctor visit to treat my common cold when they'd send me home and tell me to make some soup and drink some hot water and lemon and some mint tea and go back to bed.
Right.
I was surprised by how unmysterious it was. I mean, I walked a couple blocks with Lisa one time, and she introduced me to Lamb's Quarters, I think it was.
Yeah.
And now I see it everywhere, right? And, you know, so it's like, you know, just spend some time. Get a guide.
Walk
spend some
outside.
Time with Lisa. Spend some time with somebody who can show you, point to it, and you'll be surprised. Like, you won't miss it ever again.